Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Here's the problem with the committee, and we've said this many times. The committee's full of a bunch of smart people. The television show is the dumbest creation this playoff setup ever came up with. It is the most incredible self-inflicted wound of all time.
SI's Ross Dellinger.
Every time that he escaped or just ran out of the pocket, man, you could just hear the like rumble from the crowd, and they were hanging on every single thing he did.
And SI's Pat Forte.
You put the game in the hands of Diamante Trainum, who did used to play running back at Arizona State, but then transferred and became a linebacker and had one carry on the year. And all of a sudden, he's the offense in the third quarter against Michigan?
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
I welcome to the Pod Rivalry Week overreaction. What overreaction? I drove out of Columbus last night listening to 97.1. Talk radio down there with caller after caller firing Ryan Day. It's 45-5. Fire Ryan Day now.
Yeah.
It was slightly unhinged in Columbus. I believe the city's still standing. I don't know. I got out of there. That's just like go. Like I was like grabbing the last chopper out of town. Like it's, I don't know what's going to happen. So we're going to talk Ohio State, Michigan. Pat and I were there. We're going to talk Notre Dame and USC. Ross was there. We're going to talk about Clemson spitting the bit and LSU and a whole bunch of other stuff that went down. Incredible. But I feel like we need to start with the playoff ranking because that is what matters.
Yep.
So we're going to talk coaching. We may get a little coaching in, but we're probably going to table some of this until Tuesday on the coaching. Sorry, Matt Rule to Nebraska isn't that interesting. Matt's a nice guy and Nebraska's a nice place, but it's really nice. That's about it. Anyway, The rankings, and I have an opinion.
All right.
I have an argument.
Uh-oh.
I have an intellectual argument. And I know that is very dangerous to bring up intellectual when discussing college football.
Really dangerous to bring up intellectual in discussing you. So
I would win this argument every time if I stood in front of a judge. If I stood in front of the committee, I would win this argument.
Well.
Okay. I believe
that we
the
will
playoff
win.
Field should be set. I believe that we will tie 0-0. I believe the playoff field should be set. Done.
Right now.
Right now? I believe that the committee will come out on Tuesday night and rank Georgia 1, Michigan 2, TCU 3, USC 4. Now, we'll argue this later. Should Michigan be number 1? Actually, you have a pretty good case to be number 1, Georgia 2. But that's not the point. Doesn't matter. Those are the four teams. After 12 weeks of this season, those are the four best teams. Those are the four teams that have proven themselves. Three unbeatens and one team that lost by one on the road to Utah, they're number four. I believe that will be the rankings. Now, if Ohio State is 4 and USC is 5, then we'll have a different argument. But I think that's going to be the top four. Do you all agree that'll be the top four?
Yeah.
Yep, in that order. I still think Georgia stays number one. Michigan 2, TCU 3. Yeah. Yeah. USC 4.
Same here. Yeah.
Like Michigan's best win, Ohio State, is better than Georgia's best win, Tennessee.
Maybe.
Georgia's second best win, Penn State, is better than Georgia's second best win, Oregon. That's the argument, but whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Not really that important because you don't get that big of an advantage. But that's a different debate. That's not really an important. These are the four teams after 12 weeks. You shut it down. There is a 13th week here. But that 13th week only applies to those four teams. They will be playing teams that do not have an argument to get in. Purdue, Kansas State. It's Oregon, right? Oregon's going to get another.
No, Utah.
Utah again. Okay. Utah part two.
I couldn't stay up late enough for all that. Utah part two and LSU, which blew their chance. The only two other contenders are Ohio State and Alabama. They're going to go 5-6 in some order. Those two teams do not play this week. You cannot intellectually say after 12 weeks that USC is better than Ohio State and then say, but we're going to make USC and only USC in this argument clear a 13th hurdle where Ohio State doesn't have to do anything. Ohio State, by not winning their division, gets a bye. Alabama gets a bye. You cannot punish the 13th result against a team that isn't playing a 13th game. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Whether you agree with it?
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with it, but it makes sense. It's a good argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is after 12. There's 2-1 loss teams. Like, first, Georgia can lose. They're in. Michigan can lose. They're in. TCU loses. They should be in. I don't care if it's the Big 12. Mm-hmm. They've got a better strength of record, all that stuff.
Yeah.
USC could lose and have two losses. You say, well, they got two losses. Ohio State only has one. Ohio State didn't have to play as many games. Now, if Ohio State was playing a 13th game, then yes, what USC has to do counts. Or if USC was trying to jump a team that only had to play 12, let's say Ohio State is 4 and USC is 5, then yes, the 13th game counts. You should get the advantage of getting a 13th data point, but you should never be punished for the 13th data point. So if after 12 weeks, this is our field, it should be the exact same after the 13th week. Shut it down. Boo Corrigan should come out on Tuesday and say, it's over. We're playing for seeding.
I'm sure he'll do that.
Interesting premise.
Yeah. Don't watch.
Yes. Yeah, turn off the tube.
Which, by the way, for at least a decade, maybe longer, I've been arguing against the very existence of conference championship.
Well, it's a waste of time.
It is a waste of time. It's usually a double jeopardy situation for your best team, and that is the case for all of them that are in the playoff right now. You know, they don't need to go prove anything in this game. So to your point, Dan, I actually agree with you there that, you know, USC shouldn't have to prove it's the best team in the Pac-12. Although that one, now they did lose head-to-head with Utah.
Yes,
they're playing Utah again. So there's a little more.
You can decide who wins the Pac-12 that way. You can decide Utah's the best team in the Pac-12. They win the championship. But Ohio State didn't win their championship either.
Right.
So it at the end of the day, this is a USC versus Ohio State argument. If USC should not have to clear an extra hurdle, you cannot just say, hey, good, lucky you, Buckeyes, you lost, and you don't have to do something.
So, no, I mean, look, that I am not as appalled by your argument as I expected to be. So that's good.
No, it makes a lot of sense. It does. And you know, people want to bring in Alabama.
I will say,
you know, too.
No, Bam, yeah. Same way. Now, here's the problem with the committee. And we've said this many times. Committee's full of a bunch of smart people. The television show is the dumbest creation this playoff setup ever came up with.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most incredible self-inflicted wound of all time. It is the Ari Fleischer special of let's take a good thing and screw it up. They say they're promoting the game. The only people who paid attention to the weekly rankings are people like us and people who listen to our podcast who are so obsessed with the sport, yeah. You don't need to promote it to them. Right. The general fan doesn't even know. Like, I have general sports fans that are texting me last night, like, who's in the playoff? How many teams in this? Aren't they going to make it bigger? Right? They don't know. Yeah. They're just watching Notre Dame, USC on TV and like, this Caleb Williams guy, right? Okay, good. We want these people to watch. But you're not promoting the sport at all. You're promoting to the people who are already promoted to. Yet by doing it, you allow your committee to look like idiots. And you undermine faith in the entire process because they have to vote along the way. There's a reason the Supreme Court gets all fired up if the draft of an opinion comes out early.
Yeah.
It undermines the credibility of the institution. Now, clearly, the College Football Playoff Committee's credibility is far more important than the Supreme Court, so we should take it much more seriously. But the committee, we know, is just makes crap up because we watch for 5 weeks and Boo Corrigan, who's a good, smart guy, has to come out and explain stuff. Doesn't make any sense because the crap he said the week before doesn't jive with this week. So that's why you don't do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dumb to do it. Get rid of the show. It was a horrible idea, and you've damaged your product because of this dumb show.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to keep doing it.
Sure. Ad revenue, so, man.
Well, did you see the viewership? I mean, one of the viewerships was it 2.5 million viewers in one of them, which was like double the basketball game that came on after it or something. You know, it's amazing.
It was higher than the Champions Classic games, which were big-time matchups of marquee teams before and after. It was Kentucky, Michigan State, and
Duke. Do we need more ad revenue for ESPN? People do watch. People watch.
I'm telling you why ESPN wants the show.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, this is where you're at. Okay, so 3 times in the history of the College Football Playoff, we have had a 12-win team get in. Well, there was the Notre Dame was undefeated, and they're kind of they're the outlier, right? So they don't have the opportunity. But 3 times we had an 11-1 team get in to the playoff without even playing in their championship game. Okay.
Yep.
2015 was Oklahoma. They did not have a Big 12 championship game there. So they're like the Notre Dame example. 2016 was 11-1 Ohio State. Penn State actually won the division because they beat the Buckeyes head to head and then went on and they actually won the Big Ten. However, Penn State's 2 losses were in the first 12 games. It wasn't in the 13th game. Oklahoma also had 2 losses that year and didn't get in over 1 loss, Ohio State. But they also had their 2 losses during the regular season. So the first 12 games mattered. They then lost. They also lost head to head to Ohio State. So Ohio State got in without doing this. The only other time was 17. Alabama got in because Wisconsin lost the Big Ten championship game. Wisconsin was fourth. They were 12-0 after 12 weeks. They were fourth. Alabama was fifth. Alabama had been number one, dropped to 5 after getting beat by 2 touchdowns to Auburn. Then Wisconsin lost to Ohio State in the Big Ten title game and dropped out, and Bama got in sort of like a backdoor cover there. They slipped in. And just as a warning, if you're on if you're going to look this up, you're on a work computer, do not type in backdoor Bama. that'll get flagged. Just take my word for it. Take my word for it. This happened. I was like, should I tell that joke?
We're taping it anyway. 8:56 a.m. Sunday, man. You know, whatever comes out of your mouth.
5:56 local time.
Yeah, for Ross in Los Angeles.
It's rivalry week, baby. Let it ride.
That's right.
This will be my last podcast on the show. No, they did it. They did the Badgers wrong. So that's my thing. These are the 4. They're going to argue it. Oh, you can't have 2 losses, but. To me, intellectually, you can't do this to USC. And they're going to do it, but they can't.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, I like your argument. I do. I think that the one thing you look at is probably strength of conference, strength of division or whatever, and you can say, well, if USC had played in the Big Ten, they might have had a worse record, or
how do you know?
You know, well, you don't. Would that's they? The thing. You don't. You don't. I'm just, you know, thinking of
that's their problem. They'll come up with stuff and they go,
right.
Oh, I'm waiting to see something from there. Like, what? Yeah. And let's just move on to this game. But what the hell did you see from Ohio State yesterday?
Right.
Their defense was terrible. Their offense was terrible. Their coaching was terrible. They lost at home to a team that was missing its best player. This wasn't like, well, if the defense was a little better, they would have beat Michigan. No, they were horrible in everything.
Yeah. No, they were, I mean, that was a very, very bad performance.
Yep.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Pat, we're at half. I'll just get to the Ohio State, Michigan. And it's 2017 Ohio State. And Michigan is in this game through a couple long passes where Ohio State didn't believe in the position of safety. Somewhere Ed Reed is weeping. What about me? Yeah. Troy Polamalu's like, what? Guys ever heard of me? And I feel good as I picked Ohio State and everyone else picks Michigan. And Pat says to me, Michigan's got to make like 8 adjustments. They're not, they got 10 or 11 yards rushing. They're not getting a pass rush, all this stuff. And Ohio State's just got to make 1 adjustment. Put a safety in there. Stop doing 0 blitz.
Yeah.
And we both agree. And then Michigan comes out and beats them in the second half 28-3 and totally emasculates them. And Ryan Day plays scared and the Buckeyes play stupid. And the whole thing is a disaster. It just collapses. And Jim Harbaugh stitches a clown suit for Brutus Buckeye. And half of Ohio Stadium's gone by the last 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
What the hell happened, Pat?
It was incredible. I mean, it really was. And yeah, we were sitting about 4 seats apart or something. And like for the first, I don't know, quarter and a half or whatever the length of time was, it was like Michigan was barely avoiding getting run out of the stadium. You know, Ohio State wouldn't finish drives or would make a dumb mistake or whatever. And then Michigan hits the touchdown to Cornelius Johnson. He shakes the tackle and he's gone because, again, there's no safety help. But it's like, boy, how is Michigan really hanging around in this game? And then all of a sudden, the second half was just like Michigan was just so much better, like at everything. And, they scored – I think they scored their first possession the second half, right? And it was like Ohio State just got scared and nervous and tense after that. I mean, they turtled, I thought, big time, starting with Ryan Day. Play calling.
After the touchdown,
yep.
They get to 4th and 4, I believe, on Michigan side of the field, and he punts.
Yep, with that offense – yeah. And then I think it was the possession after that where they get to midfield and they run 3 straight plays with their converted linebacker running back. I mean, you got Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka, CJ Stroud. You got all these receivers and you put the game in the hands of Diamante Trainum, who did used to play running back at Arizona State, but then transferred and became a linebacker and had 1 carry on the year. And all of a sudden, he's the offense in the 3rd quarter against Michigan? Like, what the hell are you doing? I was just flabbergasted at some of the decisions that Ryan Day was making there.
They punted from the Michigan 48, well, the Michigan 43, and then I think they got a penalty. And they punted from their own 49 on back-to-back possessions.
Yeah.
As you said, with those weapons.
I mean, it's just astounding. Like, they were so scared all of a sudden. I mean, just bizarre to me. I was so flummoxed. Like, they had all these advantages and just did not use them.
Yeah, I was just stunned every time I looked up to see somebody wide open downfield. I thought J.J. McCarthy's comments after the game were interesting. They were kind of obvious, but he was talking about how they knew that Ohio State was going to focus defensively on stopping the run. That's what they do well, and they kind of knew that going in, and part of the plan was, hey, if they're going to do that, we're going to go deep, and boy, did they, and it played right into their hand. It was really impressive, and he put some of those balls right on the money. Of all the crazy thing that happened on Saturday, and there was quite a bit, LSU falling and Clemson falling, God, that was the biggest surprise. I'm still just stunned that that unfolded the way it did.
Yeah, I found the spot here in the play-by-play. To me, the single play where I was like, oh my God, Ohio State is completely losing it, is when they had Michigan backed up and Michigan hit a bad punt, 33 yards. They fair catch it at the Michigan 48. It's like, I mean, garden spot territory. Let it rip with your great quarterback and everything else. In the first play, C.J. Stroud drops back, and they're going to throw actually to Diamonte Trainum again, but blatant hold in the middle. And then at the end of the play, this ridiculous unsportsmanlike conduct penalty on G. Scott, backup tight end. Like, he's pushing a Michigan defensive back. They're 3 yards out of bounds, and he just headbutts him. And it's like, what are you guys doing? They got 25 yards of penalties on one play, and after that, they were really, like, never very composed or played at a high level again for the rest of the game. It's just like they just were so, like, they just shrank in the moment, I thought.
I thought that they coached scared. Then they played scared. They have all this talent. I don't know how you just don't find ways to get the ball to Harrison. You're going to go back and sit there and say, oh, it's fourth and four. We didn't go for it. You had top 10 draft pick at quarterback, top 10 draft pick at wide receiver, and there's no pass rush.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Michigan was not getting home. That was the other thing. Not only did you not have Blake Corum in any meaningful way, but Michigan didn't have their top pass rusher, Mike Morris, 7.5 sacks on the season, didn't play a down. Yep. So, I mean, like, Michigan was badly handcuffed in this game and still absolutely had their way with them.
Well, to me, maybe they slide back into this thing, but to me, this is just this is devastating for Ryan Day, for all the joking about you're not going to fire Ryan Day, nor should they. But I mean, this is just absolutely devastating. They spent a year talking about being tougher and smarter and all those things and not letting them lose again. And they lost again worse.
Yeah.
You can't sit there and go, it snowed. And look, Michigan's got, you know, Ojabo and Hutchinson and all these guys. And what are we going to do? You spent $1.9 million on a defensive coordinator, and you got lit up for 45 points.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan scored from 45 yards, 69 yards, 75 yards, 75 yards, and 85 yards.
It's unbelievable.
After the game, someone asked Donovan Edwards, what was it like when you break through and you got a long touchdown run at Ohio State? And he goes, which one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Damn it, I forgot to put that in my story. Oh, that quote. Yeah. But, I mean, then this was one of the storylines coming into the game, is that Michigan couldn't find any big plays on offense.
Yeah.
And then, well, all they needed to do was to see a team that apparently didn't believe in having anybody deep at safety.
This is a broader, probably, conversation, but, man, doesn't it, like, just the last couple years at Michigan feels to me like it's an example of patience and patience paying off with Jim Harbaugh, right? It's year eight, right? I think it's year eight for him at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And, you'd have found a lot of people, especially after the 2019 or 2020 season, that, wanted a change. And obviously, you know, he looked to the NFL. I think that's been made pretty clear. But, you know, sometimes it just takes a lot of time. And we've seen that coaches don't get a lot of time anymore, and they probably should get more in a lot of ways. We've seen the trigger pulled a little too quickly, and this just an example, I think, of patience. I mean, year seven and eight now, or his best 2 years. And it's been an impressive build that kind of slumped back down, you know, in right in the middle of his tenure, but it's certainly going back up. I mean, sometimes a coaching change is not the way to fix things. Sometimes more time is.
Since he was nearly fired and took a pay cut, he's 24-2. Michigan's 24-2.
Think it added some motivation for him?
Looked like a lame duck, and now they are absolutely rolling. As bad as this was for Ryan Day, as miserable as the next, at least this offseason, is for Ryan Day, unless the committee decides to punish USC for playing a 13th game and USC loses, and Ohio State rallies and wins this thing, it's unbelievable for Jim Harbaugh. I mean, this is one of the best coached college football games I've ever seen. The adjustments, he knew all he had to do is lob the ball over the line, and they found ways to do it. Whether it was getting McCarthy, who he has believed in, to handle these blitzes, whether it's running Colston Loveland, their freshman tight end, just a kind of a wheel route. It wasn't really a wheel route, but just gunning down the fake pass, the halfback pass he threw, even though it was supposed to be Blake Corum who's throwing it, and he's not even playing.
Yeah.
The patience to keep running. He said, I asked after, like, what happened with the running? He said, the run game wears you down. Yep. And it's like, eventually you stack that line and you put nobody back there to guard against anything. And eventually someone with the talent of Donovan Edwards is going to find a crease. And when he found the crease, it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, you got beat out of 75 and 85 yard touchdown runs on back to back possession. Nobody from Ohio State ever stepped up and did anything. That's also disappointing.
Right.
Like CJ Stroud, let's go rally. Like, we've watched Bryce Young, like, you know, from the bootstraps, drag a team. And instead, it was like Ohio State just quit. It was just, it just wasn't there. I don't know if they quit. I don't want to say that about those guys. I know they played hard and it was emotional after, but it's like, just wasn't there. The Michigan kids said they felt them break their will. They weren't coming out of their firing off at the line of scrimmage the same way. It just was, I think they were mad. You know, maybe they're mad at Ryan Day. It was just a bloodbath at the end of that game.
Yeah, they were just, they didn't show a great deal of resilience there. That's for sure. I mean, when it went bad, they folded. That's for sure. But I do, like, I've killed Ohio State plenty, but I do want to reiterate what you said. I mean, I thought this was Jim Harbaugh's masterpiece game at Michigan, because not only did they win as a significant underdog and dominate, but the elements of how they did it were just very much validated some decisions that he made. First of all, yes, the faith in J.J. McCarthy. To bench a starter who took you to the playoff and play him over Cade McNamara. The belief that your roster is deep enough that you can withstand some major injuries and still play the way you want to play and not just throw everything out. Say, no, Donovan Edwards, got a cast on your hand. Get in there and do it. And then Kalel Mullings, I believe it was, or Mullins, we don't have Blake Corum to throw the pop pass off the handoff. We'll just have Mullins do it. Why not? And then he throws it for a 15-yard gain on a first down on third and short. So
kid never plays in the middle of Ohio Stadium. He never plays.
No.
They said they auditioned who would throw the pass this week at practice, and he was the best one.
Yeah. I mean, so.
Like, yeah, a lot of faith in his team. You can tell that team just believes in it. That was a team, and there was a collection of talent.
Yep. That's
and the team won that game. So and Michigan's got a ton of good football players. They just don't have a ton of great ones, but they got a ton of really, really good ones, man.
Right, right. And they are a well put together team that believes in what they're doing.
All right, L.A. What was the scene out there, Ross? I do not know how Caleb Williams doesn't win the Heisman in only because I don't know who else would be the candidate.
Yeah,
Corum didn't play. Stroud didn't look good. Hooker's hurt. You know, I don't even know what his competition is at this point. Caleb Williams, absolutely unbelievable in that game. What was the mood at SC, and how confident are they? They're in the playoff.
Yeah, I'll start with just the atmosphere. Obviously they take a lot of flack out here for sometimes not always caring about football and coming to the game and being loud. They were loud. There was more than 72,000 on hand. It was rocking. The longtime former sports information director at USC was at the game. He retired last year, Tim Tessalone. And I asked him about the atmosphere in
legend.
Yeah, how he could compare it. Like, when's the last time it was like that? Because in the post-game news conference, Lincoln Riley mentioned that the Coliseum atmosphere that night reminded him of when he was a child watching USC games. So Tim said that it was the best environment for a game that he can remember since the Pete Carroll days. He said, you know, Lincoln Riley's kind of bringing back that vibe. And not just Lincoln, but obviously Caleb Williams. I don't think there's really any doubt he's going to win the Heisman, barring some insanely awful performance next week in the Pac-12 championship game. I don't see how he doesn't win. And they are trying too. The campaign off the field and on the field is there. They started the Heisman campaign, USC did, on Monday with some videos and such. And then on the field, you know, they had him punt twice. He punted a season-long 58-yarder. Yeah. He pinned Notre Dame deep at the 10 in a pooch punt. And then they had him go out for a pass and a quarterback throwback, and he actually committed a offensive pass interference by kind of kicking up his leg in the air, which probably prevented an interception and also got himself hit in the you-know-whats, actually. He was in a little bit of pain, you could tell. But really impressive. Just from a – strictly from just watching in the press box and watching him run around in the escapability, strictly from the escapability. I mean, he must have escaped 5 to 7 sacks in probably 12 to 15 defenders. It was stunning the way he can move his feet. He feels he has a kind of the innate ability that really great quarterbacks do of feeling the pressure. And then what makes him, I think, different than other like mobile quarterbacks is he is always looking downfield. He wants to throw it, and a lot of times he does. He rolls out, he scampers around, and he throws it while on the run 12 seconds into a play. It was an awesome atmosphere. It was a good game and just a great performance by him. And, yeah, I see him taking home some hardware in a couple weeks.
He's the perfect player for USC at this moment overall. But USC it is hard to get people in LA to go to the game. This is a lot to do, and it's LA. But if you have a guy who, in an offense that is exciting, he is a star. You got to see this. That's what he did. That's what was so great about those Leinart and Bush teams. Was like, oh my God, did you see what Reggie Bush just did? I got to go to the game. And that to me is like, you could not have started a tenure at USC better than Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams. It's like, you look at, if you're just sort of a casual fan, college football fan or fan of LA teams out there, everyone will get into a winner. And you're like, we got this young coach, we got this unbelievable player, let's go. And this is exciting. So, kind of dream season for USC in not just that their record, but how they're not doing it running the wing T here.
Yeah, and the crowd
with like the pyrotechnics.
The crowd, what I found really kind of fascinating too is, man, it was just like every time that he escaped or just ran out of the pocket, man, you could hear the like rumble from the crowd, and they were hanging on every single thing he did. I mean, they came to that game to see their star, and it was really cool. Then afterward, the post-game scene was pretty wild. He stayed on the field for 30 minutes, it seemed like, on the field, kind of blowing kisses to the crowd. He rang the victory bell. He got interviewed a few times. A true celebrity here in Hollywood.
Yeah, I he's dazzling. He's just the perfect fit with Lincoln Riley, who's now going to have his third Heisman-winning quarterback.
Unbelievable.
And he's got some things in common with Kyler Murray and with Baker Mayfield in terms of, like, I mean, he is a freelance king. He just can make stuff happen on the fly. And I did. I tweeted this somewhat facetiously, but I almost believe it, that, like, sometimes I think he makes plays harder than he has to just because to see what happens. Like, you know what? I know I can, like, there's an alley there. I could scramble for 7 yards here, or I got a guy open in the flat over here for 10 yards. But if I backpedal and then reverse pivot and then run over to the left and then come back to the right and throw across my body for 20 yards, wouldn't that be cool? Okay, I'll do it. I mean, he's got that kind of verve and confidence. Like, you know, whatever. I'm having fun out here and I'm just going to make stuff happen because I can. He's got some Mahomes in him. I'm not saying he's going to be Patrick Mahomes, but I will say the 2024 draft, first pick Caleb Williams, second pick Drake May. Good. Yeah. Congratulations to those two teams.
Yeah, we don't need Mel Kiper for this one.
No, we do not. We do not need, you know, 8 analysts at Pro Day breaking down the mechanics. Although, you know,
somebody decided, I don't know, X number of years ago, to take Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson. And I was like, wait, did anyone watch ACC football this year? Who? What?
Yeah.
Sure, you never know. Someone will screw it up. There's always the Bears out there. How about this night for Oklahoma fan? Oklahoma loses to Texas Tech in overtime after a missed field goal to drop to 6-6. Out in L.A., Caleb Williams is winning the Heisman, and Lincoln Riley's got a team headed to the playoff, perhaps.
Yeah.
You got to go through that misery.
It's as bad as it gets. And
earlier in the day, your old quarterback, who you booed out of town, Spencer Rattler, completes the double dip of beating Tennessee and ending their playoff chances, and Clemson and their playoff chances. And Spencer looked pretty dang good. He had a couple lit picks, but 2 TDs, 360. He has some Mahomes in him. Sorry, Norman. It's not going your way. It's gone your way a lot in college football.
It has.
But boy, this not is right not now. Your time. I think the Rattler one's like the cherry, like the shin kick after you've already been knocked down.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That guy's now beating Clemson? Oh, jeez. Yeah. We didn't even, like, at least we knew Caleb was good.
Yeah.
We knew that was going to happen. But what happened? What is this?
Yeah. No, they were good riddance with Spencer Rattler. They did boo him out of town.
What happened at Clemson? Other than DJ Ungulale, 8 for 29 for 99 yards.
Oh.
Transfer portal, baby.
Yeah. 8 for 29. Oh, ooh, my goodness.
I didn't that is know brutal. It was that bad.
That, I mean, you know,
that's an angry fan base. They are angry at William Christopher. They're going to start saying Dabo the way I say Dabo. I was the pioneer on this. No Dabo. No Dabo. No, they are mad because what are you doing? Why are we sticking with this? You just lost to South Carolina and blew your chances at a playoff argument. Now, see, they would have had an argument because if they're playing the 13th game, then it's a fair debate if they have to play a 13th game and USC has to play a 13th game. But now their 13th game doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter at all. And that's, you know, I remember I said a couple of weeks ago, I thought the dynasties were dead at Alabama and at Clemson. Alabama still may make the playoff, but the Clemson thing is, it's reached that point. I am thankful that South Carolina at least spared us from seeing this Clemson team in the playoff, because they are not good. It's just they're nowhere, and I know I'm probably somewhat comparing them to their old standard, but even compared to the rest of college football, they're nothing special. You know, they labored to beat Wake Forest. They were in a close game with North Carolina State. They were in a close game with Florida State. They darn near got beat by Syracuse. They got routed by Notre Dame. This is not the Clemson of the glory days. Things have gone off kilter there, and I don't know what it's going to take to get them back.
What if they – yeah, they need a quarterback to start with, right? If they have a solid quarterback, we're probably talking about them in the playoff. So, that's a start.
Well, they have a quarterback. Cade Klubnik is a good quarterback. That's the one they want. Yeah. I mean, he didn't play a lot, but that's their savior. He's right there, and they've got more coming in, right? They got the kid from Alabama coming in as a recruit. Yeah. But that's what they wanted. They wanted Cade Klubnik to play as DJ's not getting it done.
Yeah.
And you know, I think he only threw 22 passes this year, but you know, my guess is I don't know what will happen this week. Will they play Cade in the ACC championship game, or do you wait, or at least the bowl game? It's the Cade Klubnik show, because DJ, I would guess, it's the transfer portal and heads back out west somewhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We see the other if he rebounds. I don't know, but
I mean, Clemson gave up 360 passing yards. That is not a Clemson number. And no. 31 points.
Well, Rattler was making plays.
Yeah. Yeah.
How big of a season did Shane Beamer have? My goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
Unbelievable.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back-to-back years now. I mean, he's really
– that was big time.
It's impressive. He had to go to their place and win a rival game. Well, they had one in 7 years or something, 6 or 7 years they had one. It's just impressive run. I didn't really – you know, he was – I remember when South Carolina hired him, there was certainly a lot of doubt in that he could do it. He'd never been a head coach. He'd never really been an offensive defensive coordinator either.
He had been in the mix. He was a special teams coordinator.
Special teams, right.
Yeah.
He had been in the mix with some other jobs. I know that Mississippi State interviewed him maybe when they hired Joe Moorhead and or Mike Leach. I don't exactly remember, but his name was kind of in circles. He was wanting a job, you know, in the SEC. And I think in a lot of ways, people thought that he didn't deserve one. There are a lot of coaches that I remember talking to him about this, when he was hired, didn't think he should have been hired and thought he was only hired because of his last name. And I remember him getting pretty hot about that at SEC Media Days this past summer and giving me a pretty striking comment about those coaches who said those things. And here we are, and the guy is gonna take South Carolina to what? Did he win 7 last year, I feel like, in his first year? And now he's at 8-4.
They were 7-6, I believe. They won their
Mayo Bowl.
He got the Mayo dump.
Yeah, got the Mayo dump.
That's right. So it's been impressive.
And then really now they're what, 8-4 this year? So yeah.
Well, here's the thing: he can easily end with a top 15 recruiting class, and they are in on Nicholas Harbor, who's an incredible edge rusher that everyone in the country wants out of DC. And they may get him. He's a top 15 player, and bring that kind of star power they haven't got at South Carolina since Spurrier was there. And it's just a ton of momentum. Like, they can finish really strong in recruiting and end up, you know, 10th or something like that, which just it's a program 100% on the move. Pat, you mentioned something, and we should have discussed this in the playoff ranking debate. Okay. But who would you put 5, Ohio State or Alabama?
I would put Ohio State. I think that their win over Penn State is better than anything Alabama has. You know, Alabama's schedule just doesn't really resonate very much at this point. You know, I mean, they barely
did not
beat
pan
Texas.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, barely beat Texas. Texas is not very good. We know that. Barely beat A&M. A&M is a tire fire. The only team going into this week that is ranked, they beat Texas. To be two ranked teams, Texas and Mississippi. Mississippi's going to fall out of the rankings this next week. I guess Texas will barely stay in. They were number 24.
Well, they won.
I mean, otherwise, they beat Utah State, Louisiana Monroe, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, which maybe go into the rankings, Austin Peay, and the worst Auburn team in a decade. It's just not a lot of meat on the bone. I would put Ohio State ahead of them.
Yeah, they at the end of the season, they're going to have one team that they beat who's in the top 25, probably, right? Mississippi State, maybe?
No, Texas will go top 20.
That's right. Texas is going to
They won against Baylor.
That's right. That's right. So,
you beat them by one, and they lost their QB. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're going to have, right. You're going to have one
Alabama's
top 25.
Alabama's argument is this. Alabama's argument is we lost twice
on the
last
road,
play
close.
Of the game, once in overtime.
Right.
On the road at LSU.
Right.
And on a last second field goal against Tennessee.
Yeah.
And we have a really, really good offense. And I don't know why that matters, but this is the committee. This is the problem. You try to apply like the standards of the committee, right?
Right.
And then there are no standards. That's why my 12-point thing is like, well, this is supposed to be your standard, but a couple years ago, we didn't care. So what do we do? And Ohio, and they point to Ohio State and say, they were absolute trash in the second against Michigan. You know, like I said, their defense was terrible. Their offense was terrible. They didn't have any fight in them. The coaching was terrible. You could argue Alabama's coaching was terrible in the last couple minutes of that Tennessee game too. And all Ohio State has is a win over Penn State and a win over a 4-loss Notre Dame team, which I would say Notre Dame probably stays in the top 25, but
yeah, they will.
I don't think they're dropping all the way from 15, but
right.
It's a Notre Dame team that, especially at that period of the year, was losing to Marshall and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So there are, that's Bama's argument why they should be fifth and Ohio State should be sixth. Again, whoever goes 5 or 6, you can't flip them, right? Because they're not playing again. Right. Same reason why you can't move them up.
Yeah, the hay is in the barn there. So where those two are ranked vis-a-vis each other could matter.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's why the hay is in the barn for everybody. And you can't ask them to harvest more hay. Not fair.
There's no more hay in the field. Do not go harvest.
I don't care who's in this thing. It doesn't make any sense. And I know they don't. They literally, if I made this argument in the committee, they'd be like, "Wow, I never thought of that." Well, maybe you should have. Yeah, but the eye test, I didn't like their game control in the second quarter against Arkansas. Okay.
Not a complete.
All right, that's it. How about this? Yeah. All right. One last result. LSU. Oof. They had a way to play their way in, and they got punched in the pacemaker, baby. A&M from the grave. From the grave. The guy, A&M players are like, "We need more NIL money. You see what we just did to LSU, baby?" What the hell was that, Brian Kelly? That was Notre Dame fans are like, "Yeah, I've seen this act. Oh, he'll win you a lot of games, but that second half, all of a sudden, A&M just starts torching them."
Yeah, they cannot cover deep. They cannot cover deep. And, man, so a couple of A&M's receivers made some incredible catches, and LSU just couldn't cover them deep. And then they had trouble moving the ball, you know, which we've seen in spurts this year. We've seen LSU have trouble with its passing game and its running game, honestly. I mean, Jayden Daniels has had to do it all this year on the ground and in through the air. He had to do it all last year. I mean, he was the leading rusher at 84 yards and threw for 189, completed 21 of 35. So not anything snazzy. I think his longest completion was about 20 yards, and he only really had one of those. So there's been stints where they've had trouble moving the ball. And yeah, credit the Aggies. They came to play. And I thought that this one would be – I didn't think LSU would lose, obviously. I thought this one would be tough only because this is developing into a rivalry game. It's on the road. It's at night. And it was hard to see A&M lose like a sixth or whatever, seventh straight, however many they've lost in a row. It was just hard to see that. But, still a shocking result. And now all the talk of LSU maybe upsetting Georgia and getting the playoff is done.
Yeah, I do want to say, first of all, I mean, kudos to A&M for showing up for the first time in I don't know how long. This was the most points they scored in 53 weeks since they played Prairie View in the second to last game last year. First time they've got more than 31. Mm. So, nice job there. They got 38. But I'm going to say we need to practice safe hype on our edge rushers who have phenomenal games. I think I brought this up before, but maybe it's more that the pass protection was bad than the rusher is the next Lawrence Taylor. Mm. And I'm talking about Harold Perkins, the freshman for LSU. He's a very good player. He's had a very good season. But since he blew up Arkansas and we all went gaga over him, justifiably, but since then he's had 0 sacks in the last 2 games. He had a total of 1.5 tackles against Texas A&M. 1 solo, 1 assist. The other guy that, you know, we all went crazy over was JT Tuimoloau from Ohio State when he single-handedly wrecked Penn State. Since then, 4 games, 1 sack,
Yeah.
Not much other impact. Dan, I don't know about you. I didn't even notice whether he was on the field against Michigan.
He had one good play. He had a he had one good play in the backfield, I thought. But
okay, yeah,
it's it's why defensive linemen struggle to win the Heisman. You can kill their stats.
Yeah, you can game plan against them.
Right. And then even if they're actually helping by drawing a double team, they don't get the numbers. Where you can't.
Right.
Caleb Williams is going to get the ball every time. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's one of the problems. Pat, excellent lock of the week this week. Vanderbilt.
Let's talk about that. Yep. 56,
are they 56 points for Tennessee, 0 for Vanderbilt. That was what was the spread? 57? Was it 55
What was your lock of the week?
It came through. It was Illinois.
Oh yeah, at Illinois. All right, but what
Minus 14. They won 41-3. So
What was your record this week? You had Ohio State. You had Ole Miss.
No, I had Mississippi State. I went 3-3. And hold on here, producer Sean, your tally on the rundown is wrong. You are cheating.
What?
You've got me tied with Ross. Ross went like 2-4.
I like that.
I gotta look at the rundown.
I went 3-3. I won on Mississippi State. I won on SC and I won on Illinois. I lost on Ohio State. I lost on Oregon. We all did. And I lost on Clemson.
Well, Ross went 3-3 as well here.
He had South Carolina.
He had South Carolina to cover. He had Michigan to cover. And then he had
Arizona minus 4. They only won by 3.
Oh, that's correct. You're correct, Dan.
He went 2-4.
Dan has taken over the Pete Thamel role of, I'm ahead in the picks. Let me watch everybody else's picks.
Wow, that people are cheating.
He wants this
cheating.
Case of Milwaukee's best.
Three cases of Busch Light. It's going to be a Merry Christmas.
Oh, God.
All right. We've already given the Heisman to Caleb Williams. Let's give some small sample Heismans out to everybody else.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Anyone got a Heisman Trophy winner here?
Yeah, I got one. And I think he's gotten my small sample. This is the second time probably this season he's got my small sample. But it's Michael Penix from Washington. I stayed up and watched the end of that game. And God, this guy is just he's averaging – almost 370 yards passing a game last night against a pretty good Washington State defense, one of the better ones in the nation. He had 485 for 3 touchdowns. If Washington had won, had beaten, you know, their two losses are UCLA and Arizona State. How they lost to Arizona State, I do not know. But if they win that game, I feel like we're talking about Michael Penix as in the Heisman discussion, but his numbers are incredible. So Washington, Kalen DeBoer, by the way, 10-2 in his first year. What a turnaround. I think they were, 4-7 or something like that last year.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad. So really, really impressive stuff from them and Michael Penix.
Yeah, I think Penix will end up on some Heisman ballots, and you can make the argument for it for sure.
Yep.
I mean, it's been a great turnaround story for him. And yeah, Kalen DeBoer's record, like he was the coach at Sioux Falls in NAIA for a few years. He was 67-3 there. Mm. Then he went to Fresno. He went, Power 5 assistant and then to Fresno and now. He has won everywhere. He's kind of like that Lance Leipold guy where the deeper you look in the resume, the more impressive it is. I'm going to give my small sample Heisman to Devon Achane from Texas A&M. Look, that season's been a complete disaster. But he has never stopped playing hard and playing well for the Aggies, and he was at his absolute best in helping them beat LSU. 38 carries, 215 yards, 2 touchdowns. He was the offense for a large degree of that game, and it was nice to see, given his contributions to the program for the last few years and for in a year when sometimes you wondered whether anybody was still trying. He was trying very, very hard to the end. So congratulations, Devon Achane, small sample Heisman.
I am giving my small sample Heisman to Jordan Travis, quarterback at Florida State, 270 yards passing, 83 rushing, 3 total TDs. And the Seminoles defeat rival Florida, end up 9-3 on the season in Mike Norvell's first two seasons, Mike Norvell's third season. They have grown. The program has grown. They have gotten better slowly. They beat Miami. They beat Florida. They're kind of the quiet program of Florida, which is unbelievable. The idea the Seminoles are quiet about anything. But really nice job by Jordan Travis and FSU this season. We said this last week. The other programs are recruiting maybe a little bit better, but you wonder if at some point the kids down there start looking and saying, hey, Norvell knows what he's doing. This team's really pretty good. So good season for Florida State, Mike Norvell, and great week for Jordan Travis. All right, we said plenty of mean things. Can anyone say something nice this week?
Yes, I can do so. I want to say something nice about a guy who actually stepped down late last night, early this morning, and did it, fittingly for him, the old school way. He stood at a podium and said, I'm done. And that was David Shaw at Stanford. Classy, smart guy who had an incredible run there. He took what Jim Harbaugh handed him, which was a program in healthy shape. He made it even better for a while, but it was time. It was time to go. Four straight losing seasons. Actually, three out of four losing seasons. He was 4-2 in the COVID year, but the others were 3-9, 3-9, 4-8. And that's after going 11-2, 12-2, 11-3, 8-5, 12-2, 10-3, 9-5, 9-4 to start his tenure there. Stanford, hard, hard place to coach. A lot of great things about it, but if you want to be a football coach in the modern era, a lot of difficulties with NIL, with transfer portal collectives. They are not a place that fits real well into the modern landscape, and I think that that showed at the end of Shaw's tenure. But the school was certainly very well benefited by having him as the coach, represented him extremely well, and got him some great times. Took him to three Rose Bowls and a Fiesta Bowl. So kudos to David Shaw on a great career. I'm not sure he's done. He's only 50 years old. He's probably got another job ahead of him somewhere, and he'll probably be very good at it. But positive influence on a lot of people at Stanford.
Great, great guy. And he will be a very smart but courageous AD. Will hire him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? He'd be a good AD. He might be a good AD. He might be a good somebody in administration. Like he strikes me as somebody who would be a good administrator. But he also, I wonder if he would go to the NFL. That was always rumored for a while. I wonder if there's something in the NFL for him.
I could see him doing that for a while. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. My say something nice is as well a coach. Mine is while Shaw is leaving, maybe leaving college football, mine is it's just arrived on the scene in college football. Kane Womack down near where I'm from, in Mobile, Alabama, coaches South Alabama, kind of a somewhat new program that hasn't been around that long. And they're having their best season ever. They're 10-2 in his second year. Kane's the son of Dave Womack, longtime kind of assistant, defensive coordinator, assistant, hopped around actually with Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. But Kane has just done an incredible job there. 5-7 last year and 10-1 this year. And they probably should be 11-1. They really coughed it up at UCLA. They should have beaten UCLA. So keep your eye on Kane. It's too early. I think just in his second year, it's probably too early for him to get a job this cycle. But, man, it would not be surprising if he's the next big name, one of the big names in next year's coaching cycle.
All right. I'm going to say something nice about the New Mexico State Aggies. And Coach Jerry Kill, who was last seen at Minnesota, he retired due to some health concerns. They went up and trucked Liberty, who have their own coaching drama going on, 49-14. Liberty absolutely quit because somebody might be quitting. And dropped Liberty to 8-4. But New Mexico State is 5-6 in Jerry Kill's first season. They had a game against San Jose State canceled due to a tragic event up at San Jose State. We'll see if they get a game. If not, someone should put them in a bowl. Like, this team's got momentum. I know they're 5-6, but it's not their fault they didn't get the 12th game. But, let me read through before this season the New Mexico State season win totals. 2-1, 2-3. There was 7, their best season almost ever, 2017. 3 3-2-2-1-4-2-3-3-4-0. Like, nobody wins in Las Cruces. First year, Jerry Kill comes in, inspired hire, 5-6, absolutely crushed Liberty to walk off at perhaps their last game. Hopefully they get put in a bowl, put them in the New Mexico Bowl or something. I don't know, whatever. Great, great season for, you would talk about a tough place to win. Doesn't get a whole lot tougher than being an independent in Las Cruces, New Mexico. So great job by the Aggie players for buying in. And welcome back, Jerry Kill, who's an excellent, excellent coach who just really has had health issues. Is about the only thing that's prevented him from continuing on. So
good
great
one.
Job there.
Good point. Good point. That does lead me to one other topic I would like to broach very quickly here. You mentioned Hugh Freeze and Liberty absolutely spitting the bit against a outmanned opponent. Well, let's take a look at some other coaches who have been involved in coaching searches here in the last week or so. Lane Kiffin spit the bit. His team spit the bit against Arkansas and then lost the Egg Bowl. Two losses since his name started circulating at Auburn. Hugh Freeze, who could end up at Auburn, they had their disaster. Jamie Chadwell of Coastal Carolina, they'd had one loss on the season. His name's out there for a couple of jobs. What happens? Oh, they lost 47-7 to James Madison and lost home field for the Sun Belt Championship. Kenny Dillingham, going to be the new coach at Arizona State, offensive coordinator at Oregon. Oh, they blew a 31-7 lead and lost to Oregon State. So this is what the coaching cycle can do for your team. Enjoy.
Was someone hiring Jim Knowles?
No, I think Jim Knowles' team just choked.
Somebody tweeted all me right. asking. See, if
that's what I like. Say something nice spins to say something
yes,
mean.
Yes, yes.
That's right.
If Kenny Dillingham started negotiating with Arizona State in the second half of the game, sure looked like it.
Offense stop.
I do think that there is some head coach ones you can lose your team real quick. Mm-hmm. I don't know about coordinator. We're going to reach on that. But that's all right. Say something mean is always interesting. All right, we'll be back on Tuesday with more. We've got more. The coaching cycle is rolling quickly. We're going to have a ton. Keep your eyes open. You never know if there's going to be an emergency podcast coming. It's that time of year. I'll scream at the committee on Tuesday because they're not going to follow my lead. I know. Or we can start then. Maybe I'll go on someone's got to ask Boo Corrigan. Maybe I'll go on the call. They'll never let me get through a question. Anyway, whatever. Keep listening. Share us on social media. Tell your friends about us. Awesome time. We appreciate everyone listening. Talk to you later.